Iambic Audiobooks presents Tren Caro's Secret by Anita Davison, read by Ruth Golding. Chapter 1. Tren Caro, Marazion, Cornwall, June 1882. The long case clock in the entrance hall worked its way to chime the hour with a clunk and mechanical whine. Isabel slid her hand over the newel post, large as a man's head, at the bottom of the stairs, patting the carved wood three times to banish evil spirits, a childhood ritual her siblings raced each other to perform first. The fragrance of lavender, overlaid with the tang of vinegar, permeated the hall, a combination used by the servants to bring life to rooms that had lain empty since winter. A murmur of raised voices from behind the green baize door to the basement sent Isabel scurrying into the morning-room. Crossing the marbled floor, she pushed through the casement door onto the terrace, the route to the outside with the quietest hinge. A smoky mist rose from the meadows in a blue haze of early morning as her feet skimmed the stone steps onto cropped, spongy grass that leached dampness into her thin soles. Strutting fantails scattered at her approach with indignant squawks. Tucked into a corner of the grounds, the maids sat behind a railed enclosure. Squat and menacing in geometric perfection, two stone lions stood sentry on either side of an entrance which gaped, black, beckoning. The loamy earth and damp leaf smell propelled Isabel back to her sixth birthday, when she had become lost in a dark labyrinth of strange noises. No matter how much her siblings teased her since, she had never come near it again. In 2 weeks she would be 21, far too old to be frightened of a few hedges. Time to banish the monster for ever. While the rest of the family slept off their fatigue of the previous day's journey from London, this post-dawn silence offered a perfect opportunity. The lush green foliage looked anything but threatening now, and yet she still had to force herself over the threshold and onto the path. Her shoes crunched on fine gravel as Isabel crept to the end of the first corridor and turned left into a straight tunnel. The waxy leaves on an untrimmed hedge brushed her cheek as she rounded a corner. A shadow at the edge of her vision darted away in a scurrying of either claws or wings. Halting, she ran her hands down the sides of her skirt and fought the urge to turn back. The statue of a boy on a stone plinth changed her mind. Sightless eyes gazed straight ahead. The folds of his breeches buckled below the knee. He looked smaller than she remembered, a French horn held in dimpled fingers, and a mass of short curls like thick worms carved in stone. Reciting the route she had worked out 100 times from her bedroom window, a burst of confidence sent her through the next gap, into a small clearing where white colonial roses covered a wrought-iron ornamental arch, its ivory blooms exuding a sweet, cloying fragrance. Their unexpected beauty stilled the moment, and Isabel paused, entranced. Had she got this far on that long-ago birthday, how different her childhood might have been without the insidious fears the maze always engendered. Her foot raised to move forward, a movement caught her eye. She turned and sucked in her breath. The scene before her made no sense. Tall and imposing in his ubiquitous charcoal-grey tailcoat, his dark hair touched by silver wings at the temples, Father stood, with his arms wrapped tightly around her mother's nurse. Amelia clung to him, her head tilted to receive his kiss, her long white fingers entwined in his hair, fingers that messed the pristine order in a way he would never have tolerated in a hug from Isabel. pressed close, he held his broad hand spread across Amelia's back, while with the other Isabel backed away, pressing against the hedge where sharp privet scratched the base of her neck. Like a small child caught in a misdemeanor, she waited as the seconds passed, each loaded with anticipation of her father's voice raised to summon her back. Apart from a low rustle and a murmur of wind, the maze remained still and silent. Isabel bounced onto her toes and ran. Her heart pounded in rhythm with each step as she pleaded with the fate she had chosen the right path. The statue of the boy flashed past, and giddy with relief at the sight of the entrance looming ahead, she burst between the hedges into bright sunlight. Her skirt threatened to wrap around her ankles, but she reached the far side of the lawn without mishap. The arched wooden gate in the wall at the bottom of the garden stood open, and hurtling through, she shouldered it shut. The click of the latch sounded over loud, and the old wood cut into her shoulder through the fabric of her blouse. Her hand clutched her chest to massage away a sharp pain. Her eyes snapped open, and she gasped. That's where his hand lay, on Amelia's. A lump formed in her throat, and indignant tears welled. Slowing to a walk, she propelled her feet along the pathway through an avenue of trees whose overhead branches formed a canopy to shelter walkers from the sun. Beneath a gnarled oak that had stood witness to the sighs and laughter of generations, she slumped down on the weather-beaten slats of a curved bench, a favourite spot for childish dreams and sulks. Her unbound hair tugged by a breeze, she stared unseeing at the quiet beauty that was Trencarrow Lake. Bulrushes grew in clusters at the shoreline on one side. An untidy row of birch trees bordered the other. A squat blue boathouse on stilts reached over the surface like a painted toy on a carpet of water lilies. Surrounded by parkland, the main house lay a quarter of a mile back from the coast, tucked behind a rise and protected from the worst of the west winds blowing in from the sea. Each year carved its own memories of Marazion, where Isabel's family spent their Cornish summers. Some were happy and sun-filled, relived best on cold winter evenings, while the demons of others ambushed her when she least expected. In spite of everything, Isabel loved it here. A rush of dismay brought a choked sob to her throat, and her eyes filled again, blurring the landscape into a swirl of green. How could Papa behave so? And with Amelia, of all people? How long had their liaison been going on? Since Mother became sick? Before? Had he brought Amelia into their house to care for Mother, when all the time an image of their bodies locked together invaded her head, and she bit her lip. The intimacy of Father's touch convinced her this morning was not the first time they had been together in that way. The rattle of a mower sounded in a distant field, and the tang of hay filled the air. Her thoughts swirled and tumbled, until anger replaced misery and a headache threatened. A startled blackbird burst from a nearby bush, and the branches overhead creaked and collided in a sudden gust of wind to spray her skirt with drops of water.
"What are you looking so miserable about?"
Isabel jumped at the familiar voice. Amelia's skirt swished with each turn as she paced the study floor, her teeth nipping at a fingernail. From the corner of her eye, she kept a wary eye on Ashton, who occupied a chair by the fireplace, staring expectantly into the empty grate, as if the answer to their dilemma lurked there. She recalled the first time she had laid eyes on Ashton Hart, ensconced in his opulent Gilbert Street study, where she was ushered by a pinch-faced servant. She even remembered what she wore, a severe but well-made jacket that had seen better days, a straw bonnet perched at a jaunty angle on her curls, an effect uncontrived but the result of a brisk west wind that made her stagger along Brook Street. Never considered pretty in a classical sense, Amelia comforted herself with the fact that words like striking and statuesque were often employed to describe her. From the way Ashton forgot to finish his sentences and kept clearing his throat, she could tell he was charmed. She recalled trying not to appear too bemused by the way he had difficulty meeting her eyes and dropped his pen twice in the space of a minute. His attempts to control the situation proved hopeless, and, stripped of artifice, a connection evolved somewhere between the unambiguous facts and lists of duties she was to perform as Marie Hart's nurse and companion. Forced to sell her widower father's house in order to clear his obligations, Marie's offer of employment was worded like an invitation to a house party. Amelia was all too aware of her own position, and the knowledge rankled, made worse by Marie's generosity. Amelia had considered refusing, but where else would she have gone? And now there was Ashton. "You're overprotective where Isabella's concerned. She's no longer a child."
"Can you blame me for wishing to avoid unpleasantness?"
He spoke without looking at her. Amelia had barely caught sight of Isabel in the maze, but was certain she had seen them together.
"What you mean is, you don't want her to know you're in love with me."
She repeated the lament she swore never to mention again.
"Do you have any idea what discovery might mean for us?"
He emphasized the word "any" as if explaining to a child. A footstep outside the door drew his fearful glance. This house had ears, what with gossiping servants and family arriving for the summer. Of course she knew what it would mean. Possible, no, probable dismissal and a ruined reputation. The family's summer in Cornwall had involved days of planning, not to mention a long journey by train with an overnight stop in Plymouth. The result being Amelia hadn't seen Ashton for a week. The chance to clutch at a few moments of privacy before anyone else was up proved too appealing to pass by. What possessed her to suggest meeting in the maze? She should have been more discreet.
"Would it be so bad if Isabel suspected?"
she wheedled, then instantly regretted it. Isabel was the most fragile and precious thing in his life. He would protect her from anything, even her.
"I don't want my daughter to hate me for betraying her mother."
He jiggled one knee, the fingers of one hand drumming a thigh as if to keep still was torture.
"We haven't betrayed her. Not really. You and Marie never really loved one another, whereas I..."
"She's still my wife."
He leapt from the chair and strode to the fireplace, one arm grasping the sill as if for support.
"I owe her a husband's loyalty."
Amelia suspected the word "fidelity" sat on his tongue, but he would bite it back. Ashton Hart was no hypocrite, at least not openly. She slid to his side, though his gaze remained fixed on the view beyond the window. Can he not bear to look at her now? Her hand closed round his upper arm, and she leaned into him so her bodice pressed against his shoulder.
"I'm sorry, my darling."
She blinked slowly up at him through her lashes.
"This pretense is so hard for me."
His eyes closed briefly, and Amelia allowed a small smile to tug her lips. Her touch always weakened him. It was her most powerful weapon.
"If our liaison becomes public, our lives will be ruined."
A muscle at the corner of his mouth pulsed, a sure sign of tension.
The scandal will destroy everything we have, and certainly end any chance of Isabel marrying Jared Winters.
I'm aware of that.
She flounced away from him, impatient. Isabel, it was always Isabel's feelings, Isabel's future, never her own. A thought struck her, and she whirled back to face him.
You don't think Isabel will tell anyone, do you?
He ran a hand through his hair.
No, she wouldn't deliberately hurt Marie. A malicious nature isn't part of my daughter's character.
What was Isabel doing there?
She raised her arm toward the window and then dropped her hand to her side, exasperated.
I thought she hated the maze.
She does. It was the last place I expected her to be.
Amelia lifted a hand to caress his shoulder, but let it fall without making contact. A thought intruded that he might convince Isabel she had misunderstood, but she rejected it immediately. To cover his deceit with more lies might work for her, but Ashton already suffered enough guilt for both of them. More lies would most likely kill his love for her, and she couldn't risk that. And he did love her, of that she was certain. Amelia followed his gaze to the window again, and as if their combined will had summoned her presence, Isabel appeared from beneath the arch of trees. Her hands clasped behind her back, she strolled the gravel path, head down in deep thought. Thought about herself and Ashton. One of the first things Amelia had learned on their arrival at Trencarrow, apart from Isabel's aversion to the maze, was that she hated the water and would never get closer to it than the painted bench that circled the old oak.
She likes to sit there because it has a view of David's boathouse through the trees, Ashton said, as if reading her thoughts. It hadn't always been so. As a child, Isabel swam like a water nymph in that lake with her brother and sister.
His voice softened as memories intruded, shutting Amelia out.
Since that dreadful day when she almost drowned, she refuses to go within 20 feet of the bank.
I'm sure she saw us together in the maze, so you'll need to speak to her.
Amelia's voice came out harsher than she intended. Of all people to stumble upon them, why did it have to be Isabel? He turned to look at her.
The time isn't right, not while Marie...
The words hung between them, as if to say so aloud might hasten his wife's passing. He broke off and inhaled slowly.
Isabel's not aware of how ill her mother is. I have to explain that to her first.
Ashton refused to acknowledge Marie's illness and its inevitable conclusion in his daughter's presence, a fact Amelia accepted but deplored. After all, Isabel at 20 wasn't a child.
Perhaps she's stronger than you think.
He shook his head.
Once, maybe. She's self-contained and intelligent, but she carries deep-seated fears I cannot begin to understand.
Amelia bit her lip to prevent the contradiction that sprung to her lips. A delicate daughter and an understanding wife. If only Marie was shrill and demanding, Amelia's situation would be so much easier, her guilt less hard to bear. But Marie didn't revel in her delicacy. She endured her limitations with dignity.
Live your life, Ashton,
Marie had said when the doctors pronounced their latest diagnosis.
It isn't your fault. I cannot live it with you. Marie doesn't want your pity. Your remorse is misplaced, Amelia said.
He moved to the window, bringing both fists down so hard on the windowsill the panes rattled.
I'm a respectable man of property,
he sighed and rested his forehead against the glass.
married to one of the most celebrated hostesses in our circle. Yet I repay her generous spirit by falling in love with my wife's cousin."
He gave a snort of derision that dissolved into a sob. Amelia bit her lip, ignoring the sharp pain beneath her breastbone. She had heard all this before. Had he forgotten his declaration that his life lacked real love and passion until he met her? And yet, aware from the beginning that he could offer her little, still she developed expectations, ones he couldn't begin to fulfill.
"I'm sorry, Ashton."
Remorse reduced her voice to a whisper.
"I didn't mean to be insensitive of your position."
A stone of anguish settled in her chest. How quickly she turned from assertiveness to self-doubt. Was she so blinded by love, she actually wished a woman dead so she could claim her husband?
"I'm sorry, too."
He lifted his arms at the elbows and she threw herself into them, her hair brushing his cheek as she leaned into him, drinking in that indefinable masculine scent overlaid with soap, clean linen, and lemon pomade.
"I'm turning into a horrible person, someone I no longer like."
She lightly pummeled his chest with her fist, a feigned display of remorse guaranteed to destroy his resolve. He cupped her chin and gazed into her eyes.
"The situation is difficult for us all. I love you,"
he whispered into her hair.
"And Marie couldn't do without you. Isabel doesn't understand. How could she?"
Amelia stiffened.
"You don't want her to understand."
A childish quaver entered her voice.
"Can't you enjoy our happiness for what it is, however fleeting?"
Frustrated, she pulled away from him, disappointed when he made no move to prevent her, his gaze fixed on the figure on the bench through the window. Isabel sat, her back against the tree, and staring at the branches above her, not the calming water like anyone else would have done. A quiet, self-contained girl, she kept an emotional distance from everyone. Whether contrived or a result of being so close to death, Amelia couldn't tell. During the early days of her relationship with Ashton, those days of wondrous discovery where no secret was too intimate, he had confided a need to share his pain with Marie at the near loss of his precious girl, but there never seemed to be a suitable time. Granted the privilege of his confidence, at the same time, Amelia couldn't help resenting its source. She told herself repeatedly that it was ludicrous to be jealous of the love he had for his child, but the fact remained that she was, unreasonable or not. Morning sun reflected red gold off Isabel's unfashionably straight hair. Her skin never seemed to blotch and redden from tears or the sun like her own. And those eyes, emerald green with tiny flecks of gold and an unblinking gaze that dared you to look away. Slender as a reed but still touchingly feminine, she seemed to glide rather than walk. Such beauty was wasted on one so shy, especially when Isabel seemed unaware of her allure. It didn't seem fair. Ashton released a long, low sigh, as if coming to a decision.
"All right, Amelia, I'll talk to Isabel."
"You promise?"
At his nod, a wave of love and gratitude brought her rushing back into his arms.
"Oh, thank you, darling. You won't regret it. Everything will turn out right when..."
The words, "when Marie is gone," hovered on her lips. She buried her face in his neck to prevent them erupting. With a sharp intake of breath, he disentangled himself, pulling her roughly away from the window.
You must be more careful. Someone might see us.
Amelia stiffened.
I'll never be able to compete with your family, will I?
Her cheeks burned. Furious, frustrated, and near to tears, she flounced away. He winced, but didn't respond. She doubted he even registered the hard slam of the study door.